and you can print them off.
House will come to order. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo. Barbudo.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Flickery.
Here.
Bonner.
Here.
Botten.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Burkhart.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Bird.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Childers. Childers. Connolly. Connolly. Kraft. Davison, Davison, Edmonds,
here.
Eklund,
here.
Esquivel,
here.
Freeman,
here.
Gay,
here.
Gingery,
here.
Goggles,
here.
Greer,
here.
Green,
here.
Harshman,
here.
Harvey,
here.
Hunt,
here.
Illaway, Yagi, Kasparic,
here.
Croker,
here.
Crone,
here.
Lockhart,
here.
Laux,
here.
Lubno, Madden,
here.
McKim,
here.
McComey,
here.
Miller,
here.
Moniz,
here.
Nicholas, Nicholas,
here.
Patton,
here.
Peasley,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Petroff,
here.
Korberg,
here.
Roscoe,
here.
Simlick,
here.
Shepperson,
here.
Steward,
here.
Stubson,
here.
Peters,
here.
Throne,
here.
Vronish,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Swanitzer Dan, Swanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker,
here.
Childers,
here.
Connolly, Connolly, Davison,
here.
Connolly. There she is.
Here.
Connolly present. 60 present.
That's a record. Please join with me and Reverend Patrick Bradley in the morning prayer.
I ask that you lift up your eyes to the heavens. As we gather this week, we ask the Lord God, the Master of the universe, the giver of all moral and natural law, to send his blessing upon this house. We recall that Moses brought your law down to your people from Mount Sinai. We now pray for wisdom for this assembly as it considers and passes on legislation for the people of Wyoming. God of our fathers, Lord of mercy, you have made all things by your word, and in your wisdom you have given man authority to rule the world you created. We ask your blessing upon these representatives of our people. Give them wisdom to create laws that are just, laws that bring equality to all citizens of our state through education and social programs, laws that serve the needs of all citizens of our state. Lord, we know that we cannot make laws that satisfy the wants and desires of all the people. So we ask you for the wisdom to enact only the laws that are necessary in this our state. And we make this prayer in the name of Jesus, our Lord. Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. what was a fun day yesterday. Boy, did we need that.
We're at that order of business, Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January 28, 2011 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Kasparik, Representative Freeman.
Messages from the Senate. Okay. Privilege of the floor, Representative Goggles.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, Mr. Minority Whip, Madam Minority Whip, and my legislative colleagues, in behalf of my daughter, my wife, Chepa, and myself, your consideration shown to our family is deeply appreciated. Thank you for your kind gestures, your words of sympathy, your cards of condolences, your contributions, your good thoughts, and your spiritual intentions toward my family. Those things we don't forget. From our family to this family here, we certainly appreciate all your support. I can't say I'm glad to be back, but it's good to be back. The work here is in my blood, and I appreciate all that you have shown me, including our legislative staff here. I've missed you as well, and I'm back to do the people's work. Thank you.
And I would just like to say, Representative Goggles, that in speaking for all of us, we are certainly very glad to have you back. And you've been in our thoughts and our prayers this entire time. And just so happy to see you back and wish you the best going forward. So thank you very much. Representative Botten.
Privilege of the floor. Well, members of the House, it's my distinct privilege to introduce to you my son, Jacob. Jacob, stand up. Jacob Botten. Jacob is going to spend the day with us. He's a seventh grader at Holy Name Catholic School in Sheridan. He's looking forward to spending the day learning about what the heck Dad does that keeps him away from home. And he's a good-looking boy, and I'm sure there'll be some debate within the family, but more or less everybody agrees it's his mom. But I like to say some of his smarts came from me. Maybe half, I don't know. Anyway, please welcome Jacob, introduce yourselves to him and help him see what important work the House does in terms of helping to set policy in the state and do the right thing. Thank you. Thank you, Jacob.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
I'm very pleased to welcome to the body today, and probably hiding behind his laptop, and he'll be doing that a lot during the course of this week in the North Gallery, a wonderful, wonderful representative and ambassador of higher education, the president of Northwest College in Powell, Dr. Paul Prestwich.
Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you. All the way from the oasis of southwest Wyoming, we have up to my right our school board. He's been on the school board for 19 years. He's been chairman of the board, loyal supporter of our education system, and a good friend. Years ago, I even played basketball against him, and he mowed me over a time or two. This is Mr. Dan Covlo.
Representative Campbell.
Privilege of the floor, Mr. Speaker.
Please proceed.
Up in the balcony this way, I guess to the west, is the Board of Trustees of the Dubois School District. That would be Fremont County number 2. So I would like to have you welcome these board members.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, privilege of the floor.
Please proceed.
Mr. Speaker, up in what would be the south balcony, and I would like to introduce Dr. Gregory Cox, the superintendent of Fort Washakie Schools, House District 21. Mr. Speaker, I'm in School District 21.
And today we have with us the doctor of the day, Dr. Brendan Fitzsimmons from Basin, and nurse of the day, Ann Davin from the Wyoming Medical Center in Casper. We're at that order of business, introduction, reading, and reference of bills. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 256.
House Bill 256, introduced by Representative Kraft.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to domestic and sexual violence.
House Bill 256 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 251.
House Bill 251, introduced by Representative Brechtel.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to public health and safety, abortion, ultrasound information.
House Bill 251 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 243.
House Bill 243, introduced by Representative Crone.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to human remains.
House Bill 243 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Rec, and Wildlife. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 248.
House Bill 248, introduced by Representative Byrd.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to crimes and offenses, unlawful protesting at funeral amendments.
House Bill 248 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 252.
House Bill 252, introduced by Representative Harvey.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to administration of government, review of state executive department positions.
House Bill 252 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor and Health. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 253.
House Bill 253, introduced by Representative Kasparyk.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to Wyoming Nurse Practice Act.
House Bill 253 is referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services. We're at that order of business. Senate files on first reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 11.
Senate File 11, introduced by the Judiciary.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to children in need of supervision.
Senate File 11 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next bill, Senate File for our consideration, is Senate File 15.
Senate File 15, introduced by the Judiciary.
First reading the bill.
An act relating to court jurisdiction.
Senate File 15 is for the Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 17.
Senate File 17, introduced by the Judiciary.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to probation and parole.
Senate File 17 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for consideration is Senate File 22.
Senate File 22, introduced by the Judiciary.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to wind energy property rights.
Senate File 22 is referred to Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 35.
Senate File 35, introduced by Senator Anderson.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Wyoming Law Enforcement Academy.
Senate File 35 is referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 21.
Senate File 21, introduced by Senator Geis.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to property tax exemption for a nonprofit museum.
And Senate File 21 is referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 16.
Senate File 16, introduced by the School Facilities Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to school facilities.
Senate File 16 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 38.
Senate File 38, introduced by Senator Landon.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to school athletic safety.
Senate File 38 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 5.
Senate File 5, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to state lands.
Senate File 5 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next Senate file for consideration is Senate File 6.
Senate File 6, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to animal damage management board reports.
Senate File number 6 is referred to Agriculture. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 7.
Senate File 7, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the State Fair.
Senate File 7 is referred to Committee number 5, Agriculture. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 9.
Senate File 9, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to economic analysis.
Senate File 9 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 10.
Senate File 10, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to animals, protection of livestock.
Senate File 10 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 55.
Senate File 55, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to subdivisions.
Senate File 55 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 65.
Senate File 65, introduced by the Agriculture Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to livestock, animal remedies.
Senate File 65 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 27.
Senate File 27, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Paramutual Commission.
Senate File 27 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Wildlife, Cultural Resources. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 28.
Senate File 28, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to state parks volunteers.
Senate File 28 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 31.
Senate File 31, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to off-road vehicle definition.
Senate File 31 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 32.
Senate File 32, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to off-road vehicle trails.
Senate File 32 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 33.
Senate File 33, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to state parks and cultural resources regarding acquisition of lands.
Senate File 33 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 39.
Senate File 39, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to game and fish, aquatic, invasive species, reciprocity.
Senate File 39 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 41.
Senate File 41, introduced by the Travel Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to travel and tourism, film industry, financial incentives program.
Senate File 41 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 3.
Senate File 3, introduced by the Corporation Committee.
First reading of the
bill. An act relating to campaign finance.
Senate File 3 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 4.
Senate File 4, introduced by the Corporation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to elections, military, and overseas voters.
Senate File 4 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 14.
Senate File 14, introduced by the Corporation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to county commissions, election districts.
Senate File 14 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 20.
Senate File 20, introduced by the Corporation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to election code revisions.
Senate File 20 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 23.
Senate File 23, introduced by the Corporation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to elections, mail ballot elections.
Senate File 23 is referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 18.
Senate File 18, introduced by the Transportation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to commercial driving, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Act compliance.
Senate File 18 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 26.
Senate File 26, introduced by the Transportation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to county road speed limits and local authority to alter.
Senate File 26 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 42.
Senate File 42, introduced by the Transportation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to motor vehicle license plates for disabled veterans.
Senate File 42 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 43.
Senate File 43, introduced by the Transportation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to military affairs, Title 19 Veterans Commission duties.
Senate File 43 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 112.
Senate File 112, introduced by the Transportation Committee.
First reading of the
bill. An act relating to the National Guard Billeted Soldiers Fund.
Senate File 112 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 74.
Senate File 74, introduced by the Mineral Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Wyoming Market Research Center.
Senate File 74 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 75.
Senate File 75, introduced by the Mineral Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to Workforce Housing Infrastructure Funds reversion.
Senate File 75 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 76.
Senate File 76, introduced by the Mineral Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Voluntary Environmental Audit Report.
Senate File 76 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 92.
Senate File 92, introduced by Senator Bebout.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to natural gas storage.
Senate File 92 is referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. We are at that order of business, reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 204, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Croker, Crone, Teeters, no, Connolly, Freeman, Madden, absent, Laux, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 4, Education, to whom was referred House Bill 214, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brechtel, Burkhart, Connolly, Croker, Madden, Teeters, no, Freeman, Crone, absent, Laux, signed Representative Teeters, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 93, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Botten, Connolly, Davison, Yagi, McKim, McComey, Petroff, Shepperson, signed Representative McKim, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred House Bill 217, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Byrd, Greer, Kasparic, Lockhart, Moniz, Roscoe, Stubson, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Signed, Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
We're at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 35.
House Bill 35, introduced by Representative Brechtel, an act relating to the Health Care Choice and Protection Act.
And ladies and gentlemen, you have on your desks an engrolled version of House Bill 35, basically which makes it so that we printed the bill so it includes the amendments that were passed on Friday. It's just a little bit easier to understand, and so you'll want to find that as we proceed we have two second reading amendments to House Bill 35. And first up is Representative Brechtel.
Mr. Speaker, could I jump in front of the good representative?
You may.
It's also important to note that the amendments refer to the original bill and not the engrolled version. So you're not going to be able to track the amendments into the engrolled version, just into the original bill.
Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring House First Amendment for second reading, House Bill 35. In this amendment, basically strips out the remaining penalties that were left in the bill. And I think it's reasonable to consider the duty and responsibility of the legislature to consider what is being passed down from the federal new health care legislation in terms of for our consideration and standing in protection of our rights and freedoms of our citizens. And so for that reason, and to try to take some of the uneasiness away from some of the folks who seem to have concerns about penalties in the bill, for that reason, I bring you this second reading amendment. With that, I think I'll just stand for questions. But I think it's very important, however, that we keep our declaration of invalidity in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time? Are you on this one? Representative Brown?
Mr. Speaker, on and against the amendment. And I, ladies and gentlemen, I tried to figure out a way to divide this, but under the rules, I can't divide it where it needs to be divided. There's another amendment that's coming right after this that's under my sponsorship that would do the same thing this amendment does on lines 22 through the end. And so I think the real issue in this amendment is this declaration of invalidity that starts on line 10 of the amendment and runs through line 20. And my specific objection starts after the word ratifiers on line 17 and runs through the end of the amendment. And, ladies and gentlemen, I would just submit that this is something that we ought not to do, to make a statement in statute, which is going to be binding on the executive branch of government. I don't care so much if we say they're declared to be invalid in the state, although that starts to introduce the problem I see. But then when we say shall not be recognized by the state, they're specifically rejected by the state and shall be considered null and void and of no effect in this state if that Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act goes forward. And we've left this in statute. We leave our executive branch and we leave our entire state staff in a position where they may be doing things that that we would consider unintended consequences. And that really concerns me. And I just don't like, I don't like ever to enact anything in statute that potentially puts a person in a position where they can't do anything right, where they're either in violation of federal law or they're in violation of state law. And I'm afraid that that might be an unintended consequence from this. And I you've never heard me get up and object, even though sometimes I wonder what we're doing. I don't think you've ever heard me get up here and object to anything that when we're just railing at the federal government and how out of control they are and how the stuff they're doing to us is unconscionable. That's all okay. But when you get to the point that you start making these other declarations, and we saw one the other day that I think got withdrawn that said, well, the sheriff would arrest a federal employee that was trying to do what federal law mandates. Anytime you get in that sort of position, you're putting a person in a position where they either don't do their job or they violate state law, and I just hate to do that. So I would I'm on and against this amendment, and I would urge you to vote against it.
Anyone else for their first time, second time? Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, if first of all, if you buy the argument that this bill is really not worthy of your time, I mean, I can understand if you want to vote against this amendment and you really prefer that we keep some penalties in there. I mean, I'm all for that. But if you want to buy the argument that this is not a worthy effort here, then you probably wouldn't have voted for the Freedom Firearm Act. I mean, this is essentially what we did there. You need to understand that this new federal law is really bad legislation. It was drafted in night behind closed doors, not even read by most of congressmen before it was voted on. I have a duty to stand for our constitutional rights of our citizens. And as a legislature, we need to stand for Wyoming and with other states. And I believe that this is a good safety net. And the drafters of our Constitution would have never dreamed that the federal government would be coming out and making your health care decisions for you or our constituents. They would be shocked at the actions of the federal government right now. We have only one shot at this, I believe, before the damage will be so thoroughly done to our health care system that it'll be irreversible. I do not believe that this is an unreasonable request. And standing for the amendment, for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 35. All those, you didn't speak for your first time. Sorry. We're voting on second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 35. I already called for a second time prior to the sponsor. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 35. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 35 has failed. Did someone call for division? All right. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 35, please stand. Those that are no votes, please stand. Hopefully we... Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 35 has failed. We are on second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 35. Chairman Brown.
Mr. Speaker, I move second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 35. Ladies and gentlemen, this takes out, I can't do it off the engrolled bill. I have to go back to the original bill. This takes out the Korberg Amendment, and then it says on page 7, lines 13 through 23, that we'll take those out. And that is the part that says that any person from the state of Wyoming who enforces or attempts to enforce the act or regulation of the United States government is guilty of a misdemeanor. That, again, puts our people in a position where they may be mandated federally to do something mandated by the state that if they do it, it's a misdemeanor and they're caught in a no man's land. And then on page 8, It takes out lines 1 through 9, which were taken out before, which is the part where it says anybody from the United States government that tries to do anything in furtherance of their job, really, is guilty of a misdemeanor. And then the rest of this amendment, I think, is renumbering. So it does take out the two provisions that are troublesome, and the two that make that create crimes for attempting to comply with some mandate that comes under this act. And I think the real place where this comes into being is if we don't get the act overturned and the courts don't do it and the act goes into effect. And then where are we at the point where the act goes into effect? And we have federal law that mandates us to do some things, and we're trying to have a state law that says it's a crime to do it. And some of our people are going to be in a position where they wear dual hats. And while they are state employees, they're subject to federal mandates. And so they're in a lose-lose situation, and they're going to be subject to some sort of lawful sanction no matter what they do. And I don't think that's right. I don't have a problem at all with saying that this thing is ought to be overturned, that it's an offense to the fundamental notions of what our nation's about. But I don't want to put our employees in a position where they're lawbreakers no matter what they do. So that's the amendment, and I'd stand for questions.
For the first time, Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Standing in support of second reading amendment to House Bill 35. Friends and neighbors, we're, again, just to build on what my good neighbor has laid the foundation for, what we're doing is taking out these penalties as well as this declaration of invalidity. Now, I'd like to refer you again to page 9 of the original bill. Seeing how our amendment worked off the original bill, and I apologize, we just didn't get it for that engrolled version. But anyway, on page 9, starting on page 21, that every person within the borders of Wyoming is and shall be free to choose or decline to choose any mode of securing health care services without penalty or threat of penalty. This is America, right? Remember? This is freedom. Now, on page 10, starting on line 4, no law shall interfere with the right of a person or entity to pay for lawful medical services, to preserve life or health, nor shall any law impose a penalty, tax, fee, or fine or any type of any type to decline or to contract for health care coverage or to participate in any particular health care system or plan except as required by a court. Now, I just want to remind you of this person who's been sending me emails, 20-year-old woman, who is choosing to obtain some health care coverage that is previously unattainable to her, who has been denied health care coverage by the current system that we have. And fact of the matter is, when we leave language in our statutes that declares this ACA to be invalid, I would maintain this conflicts with this person's right to obtain health care and health care coverage through this act. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I would maintain that we should all support this amendment and take that language out that I think conflicts with a person's right to choose. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. McCorberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am on and against this amendment, and I guess my good colleagues from the 61st, this is where the rubber meets the road. I mean, I guess it's a matter of do as we say or do as we do. 12 other states are in the process of enacting similar legislation to this, and there are more anticipated in the future. We do not stand alone in our statement to declare the Affordable Health Care Act null and void. At some point in time, this legislative body has got to stand up and start pushing back. And this is how we push back. We have a resolution that's coming from across the hall that, if passed and successful, will actually allow the people of the state of Wyoming the opportunity in 2012 to change their constitution, which will in effect have the same thing of making this act null and void. This is a stopgap measure. We're looking at a piece of legislation that is over 3,000 pages long. And out of that 3,000 pages, there are 1,600 references to adopt rules and regulations. That averages almost one every other page. I do not know how we can get on the front end of this piece of legislation. I think we have a duty and an obligation to the people of the state of Wyoming to stand up and say, we're looking after you. This is good for the state of Wyoming. This piece of legislation is not in the best interests of the people of the state of Wyoming. And we are here to state that in a manner which makes it very clear where we are coming from in this floor, in this body today. This will define what we're going to do with health care. This vote right here will define what we as a legislative body feel about the direction that health care should go for the people of the state of Wyoming, in my opinion. We have already seen one body in Washington, D.C., totally call for the repeal of this piece of legislation. We know this is not a good, sound piece of legislation. Now, we're all going to sit around and we're going to hope and pray that they tinker with it, that they repeal parts, that they'll give us some waivers. But we're talking 3,000-page document, over 1,600 references to rules and regulations. I just don't know how we can ever get out ahead of it. I don't know how we're ever going to stop it unless we just declare this null and void. Other states are doing it. It's time to band together, join together as states, and tell the federal government enough is enough. So I urge you to defeat this amendment.
Mr. Majority, floor leader for first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The language says a public servant of the state of Wyoming who enforces or attempts to enforce an act, order, law, statute, rule, or regulation of the government is guilty of a misdemeanor and shall be prosecuted. If you don't know the answers to these following questions, I urge you to vote in favor of the amendment. Does the federal act require certain doctors to follow certain billing procedures when billing the federal government? Does the act require certain doctors to provide certain treatments? Does the act require nurses, hospital administrators, doctors to account in certain ways their procedures? If just through the act of accounting we're creating criminals of our state employees, do we need to be concerned about that? What this language does is it makes our citizens criminals for doing what the federal government tells them they have to do, or they're going to be criminals. And so you put them in a no-win situation. We have a hard enough time bringing healthcare professionals into this state to do the things we have to do without subjecting them to criminal prosecution because we're putting our foot down and making a statement that the federal government did the wrong thing with this bill. Well, I agree that they did the wrong thing with this bill, but let's not punish our citizens because the federal government did the wrong thing. Let's say we don't like the bill. We want you to get rid of it. We'll fight you every way. But let's not make our own citizens criminals in the process.
Representative Peasley, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry for the voice. I know a lot of you are thrilled that I'm losing it. I should have stood up and spoke on the good representative's initial amendment. And I just have one observation to make, and it occurred to me months ago when the Queen of Hearts stood up in the Congress of the United States and said, "You've got to pass it before you can read it." And I think back on that, and maybe she was a lot smarter than I thought she was. Because they passed it, and sure enough, it's sticking over everything in our society now. Just the passage of that has made it impossible for us to meaningfully back away from it. What it did was so pervasive and so total in its scope that we're up there wrestling with concepts, as you heard before. Well, now I've got somebody that qualifies for it, and they're going to lose their qualification. Now you're going to make all of us criminals for disobeying it. I don't know whether or not we have the cowboy ethic to just stand up and say, heck no, but it doesn't sound like it anymore. I mean, it seems like every time we feel like we want to stand up and scream, we get all weak at the knees and we kind of whimper and say, shame on you, you shouldn't have done this to us. But those of us that have to comply, we will. I haven't followed this as well as I should, because I just assumed this was going to result in some form of nullification. Let's talk about what we're doing in Washington before you mandate here. But simply by passing it before they read it, they crippled us. They made it almost impossible for us to move. In our committee, we're always wrestling. Well, what do we do to react to that? Well, if we react to that, what about this? Just the passage was enough, and that's all it took to cripple us. I guess if for no other reason, let's preserve the draconian language of this bill through third reading. If somebody can come in with an amendment that still leaves the heck no in it, I'll go for it. But we've gone from one that tries to one that goes back to our usual whimper and wail. And you know, this concept of just saying we don't like it and shame on you isn't enough. And I do not see people in this state becoming criminals for not enforcing that federal law. And if that's going to happen, then maybe we should be screaming more against it. So on and against the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the amendment. And let me give you an example of why I do. To criminalize enforcement of health care reform regulations on the part of state employees could literally mean the end to Medicaid. The criteria for categorically eligible populations are set by the feds, and states agree to follow them if they choose to participate in Medicaid. You can't change the rules. It's called the MOE, Maintenance of Effort. The health care reform law formulated criteria for covering children under Medicaid, and they were effective October 1. Last, rules are in place, and our Medicaid employees have a duty to observe maintenance of effort or put at risk the entire Medicaid program. Or, under this bill, risk being charged with a crime. So, I'm all right with sending the message, but I don't want to send I don't want them to be guilty of a crime, and so I'm on and for the amendment.
Chairman McComey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been standing around here talking about this bill, and what we're talking about doing with this bill is the same thing that the feds did to us. We're taking certain populations of our society and saying to them, if you enact or uphold that bill, that federal bill that is already law and is being appealed to the Supreme Court, then we are going to punish you. We in Wyoming are going to punish you. That's wrong. We sit on this floor and we're telling our fellow citizens that we're going to punish them if they uphold the law of the United States, of these United States, I guess I would say. I don't agree with that law. I never liked that law. The way that it was passed was terrible. But there's some good things in that law that, as the previous speaker talked about. But let's be careful what we're doing here. We're imposing our will on certain other people, and we don't have to pay for what we're doing to them on and for the amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? Chair Korberg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let's just review exactly what we've done on this piece of legislation. All of the comments that we've heard so far today about are about the enforcement clause. Okay, the Committee of the Whole amendment that was brought on Friday, the Korberg amendment, that deleted all the penalties for the federal government employees. Now, the second reading amendment number one deleted all of the penalties and enforcement for state employees, and this body just voted that down. You just said, no, we don't want to take that out of the law. We don't want to take this out of this piece of legislation. You just voted it down. But yet now the argument is all about, well, we can't put our federal and our state employees in this position. The crux of this amendment is about taking out the declaration of validity. I'm just not sure. You're already sending mixed emotions about what you want to accomplish here. That is the crux of this amendment. Now, true, it does go back and it takes out all of the penalties, but the big 800-pound gorilla in this amendment is it also takes out the declaration of validity. Now, we can defeat this amendment here today, and we can come back with a third reading amendment tomorrow and take out the penalties just like we were going to do to begin with. We took them out on Friday, and you just voted down taking them out on the state employees on the second reading amendment number one. But we can take them all out. But this amendment is about stripping the declaration of validity out of this piece of legislation. That's the 800-pound gorilla in the room. So on and against the amendment.
Your second time, Chairman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I'm sorry. I forgot you were the sponsor, and we've got somebody else at the mic. So I want to give you the opportunity to go last for protocol. Representative Peasley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would have loved to have had the final shot. And I've moved to this microphone because I wasn't being heard back here, I don't think. So here I am. I always notice a lack of interest in what I'm saying over here. So I'd like to just take one other step on this. The good representative from House District 28 has just put her finger on it, and I like to hit the nail with my head. I think the point of this is we had a nullification bill that was draconian, and I liked it. It's the sort of thing the founding fathers would have liked, too. We don't like England, and we wouldn't have heard from those that said, well, there's good parts of what King George is doing. I'm sorry about the personal name. Good King, what's his name? And Wenceslas. In any event, there was always some good things to be said, but that was the Declaration of Independence, the first draft. And we heard a lot of people didn't like it, that we had our Tories and we were concerned about this, that, and the other thing. And so what we did was we took out that. And then we still had the exposure of the state employees, and that was taken out. And now we've got it watered down to where nobody gets in trouble, and yet we're making a firm declaration, and we don't want to do that. I think what we have to do is blow this one out of the water, leave the bill the way it is, and come back on the third. I agree we don't want to put people at risk. On the other hand, every time you say there's something good in that bill, you bless it. And that is how this works. This is what the Queen of Hearts wanted. This is why she said, Pass it and then you'll understand it. Open the box before it explodes. That's what happens. Open the envelope before the granules fly out. I mean, that's what she said, and she was absolutely right. We've got sticky all over us as legislators. We don't know how to handle it. So I urge you not to, because if we pass this one, now we've got that usual toothless, neutered, three-legged dog howling at the streetlight instead of the moon and going nowhere in the world. So give it a try. Let's try to be like Wyoming used to be and stand up and say, this was an ill-conceived, crammed-down-our-throat bill, and we all know that it is fundamentally wrong the way it was drafted, and we aren't going to put up with it. If we don't do that, we're not living up to what our constituents ask us to do. And all of you ran on this platform. Remember, we weren't going to put up with this. Not all of you, okay, but most of you did. In any event, if you try to fix it, you bless it. And I say, let's go back to the hardcore. And if we want to go back and take out the employees and the punishment, if we're not going to let them be patriots in the battle, then let's take it out. But let's not do it the way we're doing it now. On and against this amendment and for the bill.
Your second time, Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Still, again, standing in support of this second reading amendment. And friends and neighbors, ladies and gentlemen, I would say let's vote this in, and we can perhaps bring a statement of invalidity back that I think is acceptable on third reading. We tried to divide that to where it was acceptable, I think, to all of our citizens of Wyoming. And we just couldn't get that done, talking to our esteemed counsel in the next room. So, you know, I think we could do that on third reading. In fact, I feel pretty confident. And, you know, just to respond about statements that a lot of us have made, perhaps in the last summer, campaigning. You know, I flat told people, listen, if you're going to elect me to fix what's broken in Washington, you don't really understand what my job is here. And people get it. You know, as far as us and our ability to do something meaningful for what's happening in Washington, that's the question, meaningful. You know, we all read the wonderful analysis of the Supremacy Clause and how we defend our Constitution and the Constitution of the United States. What we can do that is meaningful in this body is in my mind, somewhat limited. And again, a brief history lesson. The last time we witnessed a rampage of legislation for declaring things null and void, let me remind you, in 1861, that's when that happened. And we fought a civil war over that. I would maintain I take my Pledge of Allegiance seriously every day. Thank you.
Representative Brechtel, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I take my Pledge of Allegiance very seriously also. We have a duty to recognize, I guess first of all, we do recognize that our Constitution, our U.S. Constitution, is the supreme law of the land. But within that, the U.S. Constitution recognized, the Congress recognized when they admitted us as a state, that we do have a contract that allows us and I'll just read to you from our own Wyoming Constitution, which is our contract with the federal government. In Article 1, Section 1, all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on the authority and the instituted for the peace, safety, happiness, and for the advancement of these ends. They have at all times an inalienable and infeasible right to alter, reform, abolish government in any such manner as they think proper. This is our contract with the federal government. This amendment basically guts the bill. This bill does not conflict with a person's right to select any kind of health care that they so choose. The ACA will eventually dictate the actions of our doctors. It will make our insurance companies essentially federal agencies. I am here to speak on behalf of the rights of our citizens and against this federal overreach. And I believe that this clause needs to remain in this bill. And I urge your defeat of this amendment. Thank you.
Chairman Brown.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what's at issue here is the declaration of invalidity that was in the previous amendment. Except for that declaration of invalidity, these two amendments do exactly the same thing. And I argued against the declaration of invalidity only because of the second part, the last part, that where it says, and where I really start to get agitated, is when we say that federal law won't be recognized by the state, is specifically rejected by the state, and shall be considered null and void and of no effect in this state. Now, I want to vote for this bill, and I don't believe that my amendment guts it. All it does is take out the criminal penalties. It does take that declaration of invalidity out. If somebody were to bring that back on third reading and leave out some of that language that's so pejorative, I think I could support it. But for the moment, it takes that declaration of invalidity out. Because there's no way to divide it, the objectionable parts from the unobjectionable parts, so I had no choice except to take it all out or leave it all in. So my amendment takes it out. Then the only other thing it does is it takes off the criminal penalties for federal employees doing their jobs, and it takes off the criminal penalties for state employees doing their jobs. It doesn't gut the bill, and I want to vote for this bill. It still has the heck no language in it. It still registers our protest. But understand, we're still part of the United States. And until we find ourselves a seashore or figure out a way to get a steamship up the Platte River, we probably need to be a part of the United States. Otherwise, I tell people all the time, I don't know where we're going to get our tomatoes. And I like tomatoes. So the Declaration of Independence, I think, that was an entirely different story. And you may recall that when we declared our independence, we did include a seashore in it, which I think is really important. So my real concern is this. If these penalties stay in there, it might put the governor in a position where he has to say, I'm either going to take this thing and run the risk that I'm subjecting our state employees to criminal penalties, or I'm going to have to reject the whole thing. And I might remind you, when we get into some of this stuff, it's easy to rail about it, but you know, 60% of Medicaid is spent on housing old people in rest homes. It's not the kind of terrible things that people tend to anecdotally dream up in their mind. 60% of it is just to house elderly people in rest homes, and we probably all either have a relative there or know somebody that's there. And believe me, Medicaid has a lot of application to that. Do we want to put our governor in a position where he says, I can't take this money? Because if I do, I'm setting state employees up for criminal penalties. So that's why this amendment's here. As I say, I don't think it guts the bill. If we want a declaration of invalidity with some of this really rancid language out of it, it should come on third reading, and I think I could support that. But I would urge you to support this amendment and not just leave us in a conflicted position where it might be virtually impossible to do anything with the federal money. On and for the amendment.
You're voting on second reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 35. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
All those in favor, please stand. The amendment is adopted. House Bill 35, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 37.
House Bill 37, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to the State Archives Storage Study.
House Bill 37, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 49.
House Bill 49, introduced by the Labor Committee, an act relating to public health primary care support program.
And House Bill 49, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 61.
House Bill 61, introduced by the Water Committee, an act relating to water development projects.
House Bill 61, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 152.
House Bill 152, introduced by Representative Semlek, an act relating to the Environmental Quality Act regarding very rare or uncommon area designations.
House Bill 152, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 154.
House Bill 154, introduced by Representative Harvey, an act relating to motor vehicle registration, multiple special handicap license plates.
House Bill 154, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 160.
House Bill 160, introduced by Management Audit, an act relating to legislative oversight.
House Bill 160, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 182.
House Bill 182, introduced by Representative Throne, an act relating to education, student assessment measures.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring before you second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 182 and would ask for your favorable consideration. Members, this is simply a cleanup amendment to make sure that we have the right statutory reference in the bill to the federal education law. And if there are no questions, I would call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 82, please say aye. Those opposed, no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 182 has been adopted. House Bill 182, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 6.
House Joint Resolution number 6, being sponsored by Representative Hunt, a joint resolution dealing with private property protection.
House Joint Resolution 6, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Chairman Simlek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege to the floor.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As many of you are probably aware, one of our staff attorneys, Maxine Weaver, is leaving the LSO. We're going to provide a farewell reception for her at between 1 and 2:30 in B63 downstairs. Please come down and wish her well. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
We are at that order of business, bills on third reading and final passage regular list. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 120.
House Bill 120, introduced by Representative Edmonds, an act relating to public meetings being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 120, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Bird.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Edmonds. Eklund,
aye.
Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
aye.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Petroff.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlick.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Braunisch.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Peasley, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 2 noes.
House Bill 120, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of those elected to the House, House Bill 120 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 121.
House Bill 121, introduced by Representative Edmonds, an act relating to public records being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 121, and I ask for the body's favorable consideration. Ladies and gentlemen, when we debated this bill, the one thing we really didn't touch on, and I wanted to save it and make sure that we understand exactly what we were doing, was the amendment the committee put on that added redaction into the cost for the taxpayer. And so this amendment is taking that out. You should have gotten a handout on your desk that refers to House Bill 121, has a little sun, half sun on the very top of it. This amendment that was put on by the committee, it's allowing the custodians to charge a citizen for time spent redacting confidential information. And this really reverses a long-standing policy of the Wyoming Public Records Act. The Act itself currently forbids a fee to be charged as a condition of making a public record available for inspection. And the Act does allow a fee to be charged if the custodian is asking to compile or extract data from other records to create a new electronic record. And we touched on that a little bit, or I did, when we were debating this bill on general file. But I didn't really touch on the redaction. This is a major policy shift for us. And it's not something that I'm pleased with to have in the bill, because I think ultimately this is a hidden tax for our consumers and something that they should not be required to pay for. Redacting confidential information for records is a government responsibility and a decision. A citizen requesting government information should not have to pay for the time it takes government to make a decision to withhold that information. So I'm just going to leave this up to you all, but I wanted to stop and give you a chance to think about this just one more time, because we really didn't touch upon it. And I wanted the body to recognize that this is a major policy shift, that your citizens will now be required to pay for the removal of redacting information from a document when they want to receive the document. So I will leave this to the body to decide.
Anyone else for their first time, second time prior to this, Representative Throne?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just want to share with the body how this came up in front of the committee. We had a representative from our state health agency explaining the complicated process they have to go through when they receive a records request. Some of the information is confidential. It can be very time consuming for them, and if we don't allow them to recover their charges, and there's a lot of case law out there that prohibits agencies or local governments or any public entity from overcharging on fees to the point where they become a tax. That's unconstitutional. We're talking about a reasonable fee to cover the costs. And if we're not going to give a government agency more resources to provide this expense, and in some cases it can be extensive. And let me just give you an example outside the Department of Health. Frequently in the agency that I work with that regulates environmental quality, a lot of times the folks coming in to look at your permitting files or see your permit application, they're not John or Jane Q. Citizen, they're your competitor. And they want to see what you've done so they can beg, borrow, and steal. So we're writing a very general statute to try and cover a number of situations. And this was a specific request from a state agency that faces very complicated questions concerning confidentiality. And I just wanted to make sure the body knew where this amendment came from in committee.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Evans.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the previous comments. And I will say that I'm not compelled by that argument by our department simply because they are already currently doing it. And we are making a major policy shift. I say if you vote for this amendment, we put it into place, let's see what actually happens in practice on the ground. Because right now with that department, they are already doing that. The redaction of information is required. So I just think this could go very wrong in so many ways, and I wanted to stop so that we could understand that we are making a major reversal of policy here. I ask you to support the amendment and support the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You are voting on third reading amendment number one to House Bill 121. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The amendment has failed. House Bill 121, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Eklund. Esquivel,
aye.
Freeman,
aye.
Gay,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Greer,
no.
Green,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Hunt,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Kasparic,
aye.
Croker,
aye.
Crone,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Laux,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey, Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Steward,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Swanitzer Dan,
aye.
Swanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Byrd? Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 6 no.
House Bill 121, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of those elected to the House, House Bill 121 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 122.
House Bill 122, introduced by Representative Korberg, an act relating to crimes and offenses, no duty to retreat. Being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 122, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Barbuto.
Aye.
Berger. Blake. Blake. Flickery.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Botten.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Edmonds, Eklund, Esquivel, Freeman, Gay, Gingery, Goggles, Greer, Green, Harshman, Harvey, Hunt, Illaway, Yagi, Kasparic, Croker, Crone, Lockhart, Laux, Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Nicholas,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Petroff, Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlick,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Steward,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Braunisch,
aye.
Wallace, Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 aye, 3 no.
House Bill 122, having received the affirmative vote of those elected to the House, House Bill 122 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 127.
House Bill 127, introduced by the School Finance Committee, an act relating to school finance recalibration, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, this is really an important bill, House Bill 127. It's part of the major policy that we set in terms of funding that comes from this floor. And so I have a few amendments to talk about, and we can quickly dispatch them if you like. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I would move the first one is House Amendment, Third Reading Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 127. And Mr. Speaker and members, in your tray, you have a packet of four sheets, and this is the first packet. You'll see kind of it talks about staffing cost increase. My name's at the top of it. It's four sheets of paper stapled together. Just to give you a look at, and this body talked about and had some desire to lengthen the school year, and Wyoming is below the average in the United States. And I just want to kind of throw this to you to let you take a look and kind of work your magic on it. But to move from our 175 days, this amendment would move our 175-day student-teacher contact to 190. That would be the longest in the country, 2 days longer than second place. And with that, though, it trims back the 10 teacher training days to 8. And so in net, we're paying 13 more days for teachers, and then 15 more days for cooks, librarians, bus drivers, those kind of folks. And really, I'll just throw this out to you that, you know, and it's pretty well documented. A lot of things we're going to talk about today, the good chairman of education and some others with these amendments are pretty research-based. This is the most expensive one. And the price tag to do this, to push Wyoming to the longest school year in the country at 190 student contact days, would be right at about $40 million. So with that, I would stand for any questions or discussion. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Let's just get right to the dispatching and vote this one down. $40 million we can't afford. And I appreciate the good coach for bringing it because I think his heart's in the right place, but I would urge you to vote no.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Goggles.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I stand in opposition to this amendment. I served on the Select Committee on School Finance Recalibration. This didn't come up all during the session, during our interim session, in terms of lengthening the school year to 190 days. And we get here, then we ask for that. We had all of last year during the interim to discuss this. It never come up. So I stand and opposed to the lengthening of the school year at 190 days at the cost of $40 million.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Pedersen.
Mr. Speaker, it's with great trepidation I rise against the coach. $40 million is a heck of a policy decision to make on a third reading amendment. We're about ready to pass out a bill that's been worked on in the interim time and added to. And I think that we've made steps in this direction, adding more time between teachers and students and other bills that we've passed. 15 days is a heck of an addition, and $30-40 million is a lot of money for a third reading amendment. So, sorry, Coach, I rise against this amendment.
Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I actually rise in support of this amendment. I realize it's probably needed discussion during the interim, but I kind of wonder why one of the key subjects related to improving education, increasing school year, somehow wasn't brought up. So if the discussion didn't happen, then maybe we'll let the folks on the other side start the discussion. I don't have a lot of hope for this amendment, but I think this is the kind of thing we need to be talking about in terms of improving schools. More class, more time between teachers and students is what our kids need. Thank you.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you for the discussion. And after your vote, I can probably call my wife and tell her I ran this amendment. I can go home, so thank you. But really, my purpose in bringing this is to, she's a first grade teacher. She would, I probably wouldn't run again, I guess. But no, I would tell you, though, that in all seriousness, this is an issue. And I'm putting this out here today so that we all recognize it. It is expensive. There are scheduling things we can do that would be less expensive. But as we look to compete in the global economy, the world is flat. We're not even at the national average in terms of school year and not even close internationally. So thank you for your consideration. I'd call the question.
Question has been called on third reading amendment number one to House Bill 127. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number one to House Bill 127 has failed. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, members. And on for that last vote, I should say. My marriage is probably dependent on it. Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number two to House Bill 127. Members, your same packet if you would simply flip over. And I tell you, when we vote on issues like this, I like to throw it out so everybody can look right at their school district, because our policy decisions, there's winners and losers. And but I wanted to bring this to the body and talk about a component of the model, and I've been through two recalibrations. I served on this past select committee as well, and talk about the activities component. It's a vital part of our schools. A lot of our kids are involved in all kinds of things, from the fine and performing arts to the athletic events to competitions in the career technical places. Now, with those activities, the consultant recommendation, ECA to current year now, is $290.91 per student. We've operated under what was called the Campbell proposal since 2005. Now, do it what you'd like, but here's a way to save $6.2 million, but I want folks to know how it affects them. And so with that, I'd stand for questions. Thank you.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge the body to adopt this amendment. I think if you look at all the components of the model, this is the one that probably is the most overfunded. If the body wants to make a cut, I think this is the place to do it. And I think it's going to stimulate good conversation when we sit it across the House. So I urge your aye vote.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Chairman, one of the reasons we were operating under the Campbell model, I want everybody on the floor to understand this, is that the small school districts were not receiving, it was felt that the small school districts were not receiving enough money, and the large school districts were receiving more money. So what the Campbell compromise did was took some money from the larger school districts, gave it to the smaller school districts.
Anyone else for their first time, for their second time prior to the sponsor? Question has been called by the sponsor. Third reading amendment number two to House Bill 127. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number two to House Bill 127 has been adopted. Representative Harshman. I called the vote. If you're going to call division, call it before I call the result of the vote. Representative Harshman.
Mr. Speaker, then we are on third reading amendment number three. Correct? This is what we're all on. Members, that would be the next page on your four-page handout. And again, I bring this to you just for information so you know what's in the bill that we're passing out. And I just want to work off some consultants' recommendations and so you can view it. It's a horizontal kind
of
excess.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman McComey.
Mr. Speaker, the reason I didn't call the vision any quicker was because I had to wait for you to determine whether what it was going to be. And when you determined that it was going to be passed, that's when I called for division.
I did not hear you, Chairman McComey. So, ladies and gentlemen, what we'll do, have you moved the amendment? This?
Mr. Speaker, I don't believe I have.
All right. So then we're going to backtrack to third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 127. And all those in favor, please stand. The amendment is adopted. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 3. And, ladies and gentlemen, this is page 3 of that handout. And, ladies and gentlemen, this is basically, I just want you to know kind of where this evolved with small schools. And we're talking the smallest of the small schools in Wyoming. And under our current law, we provide 1.5 teachers for every 7 students, if all the schools in the district are small, 49 or fewer. And really, it only applies to one district, kind of in the middle of the state. And that particular school, I think, has four different divisions and in three different buildings. So two of the schools are in the same building, co-located, we call that. And I think it's like a 7-8. Is under 49, and then we have a 9-12 that's under 49. And so it's been a way to kind of classify each of those as schools, really, to work the staff issues. So as we looked at this in the recalibration committee, the consultants recommended that they thought this one school district was probably had adequate resources. The issue comes with others that are kind of moving in and out with fluctuations, and they referred to that as the cliff effect. Well, there was an amendment made that changed that in recalibration, then further amended, I think, by a standing committee amendment. And you can see the schools, and you can see the amounts. Over on the right, the smaller Excel spreadsheet where it says House Bill 127 to current law. So we added $353,000. And then it was amended to add another $176,000 here in committee. And then so the total over the way we've been operating is $530,000, and it affects these 5 small schools and school districts. So I bring that just for your, so you're aware of it as we pass this through the body today. So thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gingrich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge you to vote no on this amendment. I also handed out another form for you to look at that sort of explain the logic of where the 243 number comes in. The original number of 147, which the committee worked on over the interim, that number came from, they took 49 plus 49 plus 49, which was how much a small school was, and that's where they got the 147. It seemed to make more logical sense to use the number 243, because what you're doing there is you're saying that if each classroom is supposed to be 16 kids, so one teacher per 16 on K through 5, and then one teacher per 21 on the other grades, you add that up and you actually get to 243. So there was a logic to the 243 number. If you adopt this amendment, what happens is we go back to just one district qualifying, and that's that one district in Sheridan County, Claremont. Who loses here, and that's important to look at, and these are little tiny districts, but it means a lot. I mean, Tensleep would lose 1.73 teachers. Platt would lose 1.09. Meteetse, 2.18. And my own district, Dubois, would lose 1.2. It doesn't seem like a lot of money. You know, for my little district, it's $92,000. But here's what's happening. I'll just give the example of my own community in Dubois. They that three-year average of attendance has been going down. So now they do not qualify anymore, and they have to actually make a cut of $400,000 into their budget. So they've been meeting on how they're going to start riffing teachers. It causes a domino effect, because once we start riffing the teachers, that's more population leaving DuBois. I'm not sure what the answer is. You know, I guess we can all become Mustangs and move all our kids to that school in the center of the state. But, you know, you got big districts that I guess are, you know, everyone keeps saying they're overfunded by $100 million. These little districts are barely surviving, and this is a small amount of money to keep these districts operating. This is 1.2 teachers for my district, and we fight for every dollar we can get. I mean, if the big districts have so much money, you know, they can certainly transfer more of it to us. But these are little districts, and we should be helping them. And I'd urge you to vote no on this amendment.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge you to vote no also. We thought we were thoughtful about the way we created the small district adjustment. And it's not expensive, but the small districts, you know, per pupil do cost more to operate. That's a policy decision that we've made. We cannot afford to bus kids all the way across the state, so we have to pay a little bit more to operate them. In the grand scheme of things, it's an insignificant amount of money, and I would urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Representative Crone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have much to add to the last two speakers. I just urge the body to vote no. This would cost the southern portion of my district 2.18 teachers, and that district's struggling as it is, so I would urge the body to vote no on this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Greer.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. Yes, I would encourage the body to vote no on this as well. Having graduated from one of these districts, school districts, and also having one now in my current district, you know, we look at that number, 1.73. These are huge impacts on these school districts. They're small. And we've made a decision, a policy choice long ago, I think one supported by our Supreme Court as well, that we're going to keep these open and make sure these schools are viable and provide a quality education. And this runs contrary to that. Now, we can start busing people from, well, I can't say the rivers, but from these far-flung places and bring them in and bring them on into the bigger cities and put them up in dorms if that's where we want to go. But I don't think so. Please vote against this amendment.
Anyone else for their first time? All right, second time prior to the sponsor. Representative Harshman.
Members, on the handout I provided you, and if you'll read the narrative at the bottom, basically current law is 1.5 teachers for every 7 students. So we actually kind of mingle grades, a first, second grade together and so on. What we will pass out today, I kind of got the feeling the weight of the body, but I just want you to know that what we've changed this now is to one teacher in every grade as long as there's one student enrolled in that grade. I think you look at these and you hear testimony about that's 1.7 teachers, that's 2.2. There are not going to be any more teachers hired with this money. This is going to go to operations. And maybe that's appropriate. I mean, that's fine, but I think there ought to be a better way then to look at that instead of inflating a thing to kind of go around to get there in the end. So, anyway, just a little more info for the body and call for the question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Questions been called on. Third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 127. No, that's not right. Yeah. All those in favor say aye. those opposed?
No.
Any divisions called? No. Third reading amendment number 3 to House Bill 127 has failed. Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, members. Okay. Mr. Speaker, I would move House Third Reading Amendment number 4 to 127 and ask for your favorable consideration. And, folks, it's the last page in that handout, and it has the graph showing total transportation miles in the state of Wyoming. And, you know, I think it's important, too, when we the real beauty of this body is when
like the good chairman and I have been arguing on opposite sides of these previous few issues, you'll probably find us on the same side here in about 2 minutes. And I remember when I first came here, I was our speaker then, at that time, told us that whenever you're in committee, or whenever you're listening, it's kind of a thing that we owe each other a certain civility. And so I've always tried to remember that, you know, from 9 years ago when I was there, and not to roll your eyes or not to sigh or not to call each other fools or dummies or any of those things. And because here in a few minutes, we're going to probably be singing Kumbaya on a few things. But so with that said, this one I am bringing you in a to learn some more about transportation. And I think we improved the transportation issue on second reading, but I wanted to give you this information, and this is available on your LSO website. If you go down on the left column, go school finance, and then there's you can go down to transportation. It'll tell you a lot about transportation and how many field trips, how many extracurricular, how many daily bus routes, the cost, those kind of things. I just included one page for you to look at total miles over the last 20 years. And you can see we've risen, our mileage has risen from 15.7 million miles traveled to 20 years later, 19.3. So we've increased. I think there's a good amendment I'll support coming after this to help incentivize this. But I want to talk about this amendment really takes that 90% on activity trips reimbursement part. And I was fine with that when we left Friday, but then I got thinking about it a little more of the weekend. I thought, I'm not sure I know what that really did. And it the total cost is about $1.6 million a cut out of the transportation budget. But who does that affect? I have no idea. I mean, that's why I tried to show you these charts today, that you could see small schools weren't treated very well in a couple of those amendments. They lost. They were losers in that. But on this $1.6 million on activities, I don't know who it's going to affect the most. And I got to think, I guess just thinking about it as a guy here in Wyoming, I would almost think it's going to affect those on the border, the areas to the outside of our state, because they simply have to travel the farthest. If you're over there in Uinta County and you have to travel to Sheridan County for an activity, that's a long haul. And I guess if you're in the middle of the state, in the county with number one on your license plates, you might have long trips, but you never have a Uinta to Sheridan trip. And so I don't know, I guess, and so I'm asking the body to maybe back up on that until we know a little more and to pass this amendment. And then I think we've got a pretty good incentive coming on the following amendments. So with that, I'd stand for any questions. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Stubson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've had good detailed conversations about this over the last couple days, and I would just maybe equate the good coach brought a fourth down and 10 play last on second reading, and this is the Hail Mary on third reading maybe. But I would say let's leave this in place then. Let's defeat this amendment. If the amendment coming up is a good incentive on transportation and plugs in that cost consciousness that this body has indicated is important, let's look at that and talk about that. But I think it's important to have what very little we've done in place to frame that discussion. Otherwise, we leave us the choice between nothing and the amendment coming down the road. So I would encourage you to defeat this amendment. Let's leave what we've done in place after good, thorough debate, and then we can see if it makes sense in the context of this amendment that's coming forward here in just a couple minutes.
Anyone else for their first time, for your second time? Yielding your second time, Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just think to back this up and put it to where the current law is, because we really don't know the effects. And I hate to vote on things when, because it's going to make a difference to somebody, and I'm not sure who. I think the big schools will probably be all right. They've got a little more cushion to kind of, they can work things around, do different things, not hire one a teacher if they've got 2,000 teachers in their district. But I just don't know the effects of it, so I urge caution, and I'd urge an aye vote on this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
You're voting on third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 127. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 127 has failed. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 5. This is the aforementioned good bill coming down the road that we can all support, even coach. So but basically what this does is what I wanted to do was come up with a way to give the districts a little skin in the game on their transportation costs, but instead of just a negative incentive like has been proposed before, this one gives them a lot of positive incentive that I think can really have a positive impact on our districts and save us some money. What this amendment does is it says that whatever the actual transportation costs were for the year before, that's what they're going to get for the next school year. If they spend less than that, the extra amount that they saved, the district gets as a bonus. So they get the extra money, they get to keep the money. If they spend more than what they spent last year, the amount that they spend over that amount is reimbursed at 50%. And then whatever their actual costs were, that becomes the baseline for the next year. So as an example, if a district's costs the previous year were $600,000, and they find a way to save some money and only spend $550,000 this year, they get to keep that extra $50,000 savings as a one-time bonus that they can use for whatever they want in their district. But then going forward, since they proved that they can get by with $550,000, that becomes a new baseline. So the year after that, the $550,000 would be their baseline. The flip side is if they started out with $600,000 the year before and they increased it and, say, spent $620,000 during the new year, they would get reimbursed $610,000. So that extra $20,000, they would split 50-50. But then going forward for the next year, the actual cost was $620,000, so they would get the bigger amount for the following year. And again, the process repeats. But if they save money, it gives them incentive because they actually get rewarded by getting to keep that money, and it gives them some skin in the game. So I would urge your yes vote on this amendment. I'll stand for any questions.
For the first time, Mr. Majority for later.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, and I hate to rain on the parade of the amendment that's going to solve everything. What this amendment doesn't take into consideration is the primary driver of transportation costs, which is fuel costs. And if you have a situation in the Middle East where all of a sudden your fuel, instead of running at $3 a gallon, is running at $4 or $5 a gallon, for gasoline or diesel fuel, all of a sudden your expenditures are driven by things that you have no control over. And so you're penalizing people for what's happening in the Middle East or other parts of the world. So I'd urge real caution. Now, if this amendment had a factor in it that factored in fuel costs and then said didn't spend more or less, that would make sense, or you didn't drive more miles, that would make sense. But when you're talking about actual gross dollars, there's some dangerous and unintended consequences I'd urge the body to think about.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking on and in favor of this motion, and I think the argument that we just heard from the good representative from the County of Camels misses the point. If we do have increased costs, there's an incentive with this particular amendment that the school districts try to control it, as opposed to say, we don't care because that's one that is paid 100% by the state of Wyoming. So I think I'd urge you to consider this this particular amendment, because it does put the school districts into a mode where they can manage their costs. And if they do it right, they get to use that for other purposes that are a higher priority to them. But it increases their responsibility for managing transportation costs. And I think that's a good thing.
Representative Greer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm against the amendment. I like this concept of the incentive. However, my neighbor to the north and my neighbor to the south and my district all have this same problem, is every couple of years they shuffle around where our activities are going to go. And it significantly shifts the travel burden in those school districts.
And I just could see, again, we always talk about unintended consequences. It puts us at an unfair in an unfair position. And we have one of those fundamental shifts happening this year with one of my school districts.
Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, speaking in opposition to the amendment, we don't control gas prices here in this body. Somebody outside the state of Wyoming controls those prices, fuel costs. This year, we've seen some increases. We've spoken to business managers across the state of Wyoming during our deliberations. Those are the variables that we don't control. Putting out a baseline and living on that baseline would cause us to come back here. If those prices increase, would cause us to come back and make those changes. But I believe leaving it as is, allowing 100% on our transportation costs for our schools, allows that flexibility for school districts in terms of student activities. When they're transporting kids to activities, when they're busing them to school, it allows them some flexibility there. I applaud the bringer for the incentivizing, and it's something we probably should think about. But on against the amendment.
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, you know, there's some basic things that have to happen. Kids have to get to school. And I think that school districts do the best they can to make sure that you don't have little kindergarten kids on the bus starting at 6:30 or 6:45 in the morning. They try and make that work as best as possible. So getting kids to school is non-negotiable. Then you talk about activities. What activities do you inhibit? What activities do you allow? Do you allow the ones that are sports? And you say, okay, school districts, you're already scheduled for these games or these activities, and so, yep, those are the ones we're going to go to. And so then where do they have room for adjustment if gas prices do go up? Well, I submit to you that it is the kids who are not involved in the major sports, but involved in smaller activities, the ones that encourage business development, encourage personal development. It encourages a lot of other ways for children to develop. And so what you're asking is, okay, school kids need to get to school, not any negotiation there. Sports are already set up, and other schools depend on those scheduling that already happened. And so now you have the kids that are not athletic. And are they now being denied opportunities to travel for that development based on gas prices? I mean, I just think that activities, if we're going to have them, they need to be open to kids in a lot of different areas. I mean, kids that are on the debate team, some of them wind up here debating. Isn't that a good thing? Let's teach them how when they're younger. This just seems like if we could limit their expenditure on buying buses, if we could limit their expenditure on buying tires and say, can you get a few more months out of these tires? You know, if we could limit those kind of expenses that would be within their purview, I think that this would be a good amendment. But the point is that the effect, the unintended consequence is you're leaving some kids out of activities because that's where it's going to be pushed. It's not going to be sports. Sports are already they're on the calendar. The calendar's up and running for now. It's the kids that are involved in music. It's the kids that are involved in speech and debate. It's the kids that are involved in clubs and activities that help further their development in other ways. Because we're not all alike and we're not all athletic, but everybody deserves a chance to learn and to grow and develop and to interact with kids from other schools in a lot of different ways. So I'm on and against this amendment.
Representative Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and appreciate all the good comments. And it's the beauty of this. You get to see it through other lenses. But I'd ask the members to look at the amendment, amendment number 5, and it's on line 2, the first part. It deletes the steps in committee of the whole amendment, and then line 4 deletes the Harshman second reading amendment, which is currently where we're at right now, which is 100% for route transportation, 90% reimbursement for activity transportation. So activities are getting whacked right now, just so you know that. And I'm not sure. It's about a $1.6 million, and I don't know who's going to get it the most. I don't know. It's obviously the folks who have traveled the farthest. And I don't know who that is. I'd think people in the corners, you know, the Crook counties, the Bighorn counties, the Uintas, and the Laramie counties. Okay, so that's my point on this. The thing I like about this current amendment, it brings it all back to 100%. And then it establishes a baseline. And then the thing that fuel prices was my first question. Well, why don't we just maybe look at route miles? Because that's where the money's at, miles, if districts can cut down their miles. But let's just talk about an increasing diesel fuel situation, but nobody's mentioned, or and we've talked about the increasing fuel price, but nobody's mentioned the decreasing fuel price, and that would be even more incentive and more of a bonus that schools would be able to really hold on to is in a decreasing fuel price environment. So that thing cuts both ways, I think. You know, districts could feel a little pain on in that situation, but it could also gain a little bit on a decreasing fuel price. So for the amendment, thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, one of the things that I just want to highlight to the body is that in the recalibration bill, we are actually going to have LSO staff look at all of these changing factors every year. So if we do have a spike in fuel prices, it'll be identified to the select committee, or I mean the joint committee, and we'll be able to bring recommendations if there is a huge hole that needs to be filled. That's the beauty of the process that we're developing with this bill. The thing that I like about this bill is it allows us to kind of get control costs. Right now there is nothing controlling costs except for the driving parts of the cost, which is the decisions that the districts make. So this allows us to get a hold of it. We have a process in the bill to monitor it as we move forward, and I feel comfortable that we will do the right thing and make sure that there's enough money in the future, but it also doesn't just let the horse out of the barn. So I urge your support of the amendment.
Anyone else? Representative Croker.
I just want to remind everybody that the way this is written, if fuel prices do increase, the districts are only paying 50% of the increase. But if fuel prices come down, the school districts are realizing 100% of the savings. So as it averages over time, the school districts are actually going to come out ahead. It just gives them some skin in the game and incentives to be more efficient and save money. I would urge your support of this amendment, and I call for the question.
All those in favor of third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 127, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Okay, all those in favor of the amendment, please stand. Amendment's adopted. Chairman Teeters.
Go.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 6 to House Bill 127. Third reading amendment number 6, and I'll try to be brief. simply says that from this point forward, that the districts shall maintain a ratio of 16 students to one teacher for all classes, K through third grade. And if they cannot, then based on extraordinary circumstances, like facility capacity or other reasons, that they can go ahead and petition the State Department of Education and deal with that. I understand that there are small districts in the state that it's not feasible for them to have another classroom. At the same time, we know there are districts in the state that are intentionally loading classes and taking the extra money, and that's to the detriment of our students. I chose K-3 because K-3 is no doubt the most critical time when we actually have data to show that small classroom sizes do make a difference. I left the other grades alone simply because it could get unfeasible really quickly if we try to do it all at once. But I think this is a small step in the right direction. We spoke about this during the select committee process. There were so many other issues that we never really got back to it, and I thought it would be a good idea for this body to go ahead and address it. And I would stand for any questions.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The only issue I have is the fact that the controller of this, more times than not, as the testimony has shown, is that they just don't have the classrooms. They certainly hire the teachers if they had a place for them. And whether or not the phrase here about petitioning to the state board, you know, if there's direction there, that would be a legitimate way of avoiding this requirement. I wouldn't mind voting for it, but I don't, you know, what recourse would they have if the board would say, no, we're not going to let you, but it's your problem to go find more square feet while your new school is being built or while you're trying to grow into or your school to develop to match a growing population. That's really what the problem is. Thank you.
Jim Hirschman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, another handout. This one, it was brought to my attention. I was just trying to put a big star to get your attention. And then I always circle things. But I'm not a fan of anything there. I think it's just a big star with a circle around it. I didn't even think of that. But, again, looking through other people's eyes, some of these old rock and rollers from the 80s. Mr. Speaker, on and in strong support of the good chairman of education's amendment, I just this first page here shows you the effect size. We purchased a research-based model. Put it in a cost to deliver the services, a cost-based format, and send it out in a block grant. And, you know, we've gone back and forth over that deal, and what we get from our federal government, sometimes we feel like we're sending down to our local government. They feel that about us. And so trying to be careful with that, and I think this is crafted in the right way, which when things happen that we can't control, the districts do have a remedy to say, hey, we're not there yet. Give us a couple more years and we can get this to 16 in K-3. Because it won't happen overnight. But most of the districts are moving in that direction in many ways. But back to this handout shows the effect size. This is where the money's at in the model. This is the $1.3 billion or whatever. And the big money, full-day kindergarten. We passed a law last year finally requiring students in the state of Wyoming to have full-day kindergarten. It's the largest effect size on there. Good job to all of us. I mean, it was a great job. 0.77. And then you can see next the good chairman's motion, particularly with low-income minority students. This is what the research tells us. And so when it's not being followed, we've just simply purchased an expensive study. And so this is an important question, but I like the way this amendment has given the districts a way out if it's impossible, but really stated that we've purchased this model, and all the testimony in the recalibration was, it's not the model that's not working, it's the implementation. Implementation of the model, the rollout, the implementation. And it was made clear to us that unless you can find a better model or a better way to improve student achievement, show us, but there doesn't seem to be one out there. And so this just puts a little more step to say we're going to adhere and implement the model on one of the most important model components. As the good chairman said, K-3 class size. And this all goes back to to really one of the best studies in education, the Tennessee Star Study back in the 80s, followed up in the 90s. This has a big effect size. So on and support of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their first time? First time, Representative Freeman.
I'll be brief. My district has problems because they don't have enough classrooms. And so I have to say that. But more importantly is my wife is a first grade teacher, and if I vote against this amendment, I do not have a place to go back. She, I believe she has 20 children in her classroom, and it's a small classroom. And for those of you who have been in a granary that has a lot of mice, it kind of looks that way because the kids are all over the place and they don't have the space. And my wife, bless her soul, is very much devoted to them. If this didn't have the out to where that it said we don't have the space, I couldn't vote for this. But for the districts that have the space and they want to do the best thing for children, I strongly support this and urge you to do the same thing.
All those in favor of Third Reading Amendment number 6 to House Bill 127, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Third Reading Amendment number 6 to House Bill 127 has been adopted. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This body, brothers and sisters of the 61st, we've proven today that anything worth debating is worth over-debating. Plan this afternoon to come in at 2 and go till 5 or 5:30. We'll come in early tomorrow and again go to 5 or 5:30 so that we can take care of the people's business. With that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House stand in recess until 2 p.m.
All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The House will stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Mr. Speaker.